Blog Talk Radio.
Stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now talk radio show sponsored by NASFA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Penelope Bennett, and I am from Bellevue, Washington. And tonight is Monday, September 6th, 2021. This is scan number 2741. Tonight is special guest night, and we have a very special guest with us tonight. Her name is Holly Davey, and she's from Saginaw, Michigan. I'll tell you a little bit more about Holly in a few minutes, but before we brought Holly on and had an opportunity to hear Holly tell her story, I want to talk to you a little bit about NASCA. If you are considering calling into the show tonight and being a member of the panel, I would highly encourage you to do so. The number to call in is 595-2118. Again, that's area code 646, 595-2118. One of us will meet you on the back line and bring you into the show. You'll have an opportunity to ask Holly a question or offer a comment around her story. So I'd like to tell you a little bit more about NASCA, because NASCA, as you know, is all about child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA, and it is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with two goals. The first goal, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal, offering hope and healing, numerous paths such as this show, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So again, if you're streaming the show and you're intrigued about calling in, there's no experience necessary to call in and be a member of the panel, only a willingness to do so, and all you have to do is dial the number 646-595-2118, and we welcome you on. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how our special guest show night are structured. And we like to have an opportunity to break to the panel twice, the panel members to call in. And Holly, I'm just going to let you know, you've already got a couple panel members that have already called in to support you. So you've got a lot of support tonight. And because we like to give our panel members an opportunity to interact with our guests a few times, and it is a special guest night, so we do hear someone's story, we like to structure the show in three segments. In the first segment, we like to do it chronologically through a guest story, because it's a story about their life. So in the first segment, which is usually about 20 minutes, we like to ask the guests just to, we introduce the guests and ask them to tell us a little bit about their first very, very early years from the time they were born until about the age of 18. That would include where they were born, the location, who was in the family, just context. We like to paint a picture. Even if you don't want, you know, maybe the topics and the timeline of events of the maltreatment don't start until a little bit later in life, we like to just have some consistency with the shows and just paint a picture of the entire life of our guest. We break the panel around the age of 16, 18. The panel has an opportunity to ask a question or pose a comment. We then we'll go back into the story, the special guest story, and that usually focuses on the middle years, so around 16 to 18 up through maybe 30, 35. We'll break again to the panel, another opportunity to interact with our guests. And then the last segment of the show is about the age of 30, 35, the healing journey a lot of times incorporated in the last segment, as well as what our guest is doing today and what they're looking forward to doing in the future. So that provides a little bit of context about how the special night shows are run. They're done chronologically with hopefully two or more breaks to the panel. Unmute Holly's microphone. I want to tell you a little bit about Holly. As I mentioned, she's from Saginaw, Michigan. Her maltreatment, unfortunately, included that she was abused from the age of 5 to 10 sexually by an older male cousin who was a very violent person, and she remained silent about her abuse until she was an adult. So I'm not going to read you any more about Holly's story because she's here to tell it herself, but I wanted to give you a little bit of context around Holly. And Holly, I'm going to unmute your mic, and I'm going to welcome you into the show. You are now.
Thank you.
Hi, Holly. You're welcome. How are you? How are you doing? Are you there, Holly? Maybe she's on mute.
No,
hey,
she's,
Bill, can you
she's
hear me?
Not on mute. Not on mute with us. She might be on mute with her own phone.
Okay.
I did hit the mute button. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. No problem. Okay, good. Well, I'm glad it's not, you know what? Sometimes it's my phone, so that's okay. This is, you know what? It is what it is. So, well, and you heard Bill Murray's voice. So Bill's on with me this evening as well to help me host you. And as you know, Bill is the founder and CEO of NASCA. And we also have on our panel Nancy Brown from West Virginia. So we're also really pleased to have Nancy on to be on the panel to support you. So Holly, how are you this evening?
I'm good.
Good. Excellent. Well, thank you for coming on the show and telling us your story. And I just am curious, as I kind of kicked off the show, if you wouldn't mind just like starting us off and telling us a little bit about your background and about your history and, you know, the where you were born, what state you were born, who was in your family in terms of family members. Could you just give us a little bit of background if you're comfortable with that?
Yeah, I was born in Saginaw, Michigan. My parents have been married for 52 years. I have two sisters, one's 4 years older than me, and then I have a younger sister that's 8 years younger. And like I said, my parents are still married. They've been married 52 years, and the abuse started when I was about 5 and continued for 5 years. It was a cousin of mine that also lived in Saginaw. And they were our closest cousins, like living wise to us in the area. And, so we would hang out with them the most out of anybody else in our family. My mom's one of 8, so all her relatives lived down south and they were the only ones left in Michigan besides us. So, we engaged with them a lot. We had lots of sleepovers and lots of family functions. And like I said, it started when I was 5, and then it went until I was about 10. And that's when his parents got divorced, and he moved with his mother to Chicago. And that was the last time I had ever saw him. And then when he was about 20, got arrested.
Can I just stop you real quick? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I don't mean to interrupt you, but we've got 90 minutes. And I know we're anxious to hear your story. I just have a question around just getting up to the age of five, and you gave us some context. So it sounds like your mother came from a large family, and so you had a large extended family, and these were okay. So in your family of origin, in your home with your sisters, and I understand that you were in the middle. You have a sister 4 years older, a sister 8 years younger, and your parents, you were still married. They married 52 years. So there, just regarding your childhood at home before this sexual abuse started with this older male cousin, things were, how would you describe just your family dynamic and just, you know, basically how you were raised and treated by your parents in the home?
I don't really remember much before the abuse started, but my family's pretty common. Just family vacations, and my mom was a teacher. My dad worked for General Motors, and you know, my older sister and I were kind of close. We kind of had a competition for each other for attention, and but it was just basically a comfortable lifestyle, you know, nothing special. And
So your parents were nurturing. There was comfortable and secure in your home, from what you can remember. Oh, sorry. Maybe you're on mute again. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I keep hitting it with.
No problem.
And my older sister was 12, my mom came and told us that she was pregnant, and we couldn't really believe it. But so that's when my younger sister was born. And then like about a year after my abuser had moved, my younger sister was diagnosed with leukemia. Mm-hmm. And that's when my parents like kind of shut down mentally and emotionally.
So, by the way, I'm so sorry to have a sibling, you know, that is diagnosed with an illness like that, and just to go through that is absolutely, you know what, we lost her, I think maybe she's just having some phone issues, so we'll wait for her to call back in, and Bill, I just wanted to bring you on and just say hello. While we're waiting for Holly, thank you for joining me tonight.
Well, I saw her drop off too, so I'm sure she'll come right back. I'm happy to be here to help support the show and so forth. We're not getting as many people to call in as we used to get. In fact, I'm still struggling with getting some special guest people to sign up for the show. In fact, we have some next week. But anyway, I've been monitoring the shows almost exclusively monitoring the shows, because until we train another host or two, there aren't enough people to trail. So I've become the universal trailer here for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, if it looks like there aren't very many people here, I call in. So that's what I did.
There is, you know, building also the schedule and having guests scheduled to come on. And I know that we did, and there was some, you know, miscommunication with some of the guests that their shows were canceled and they weren't. So I know that we're trying to fill some of those slots, in addition to, you know, filling the slots for future shows.
Well, yeah, that's right. And we have some slots that are marked with the name of the guest and nothing else. And that's because these are the names of people that I was given, but who haven't responded to me to give me their, you know, contact information and their bio information. So there are also not yet booked slots. And some of these spots where it's just the name of the guest and it says much more to come, They're gonna become not yet booked spots. So we have quite a few things to fill in the future, and I'm still waiting, for example, to get the bio. Carol checked again today with the gal from Wednesday night, who I've been in contact with. She keeps promising to send the bio, understanding that, you know, her date's coming up, and I have the bio. So.
Okay, anyway. So for those of you streaming in and listening, take a look at the schedule. It's on NASCA.org. You can look under current schedule, and you can see what Bill's referring to. There's the schedules for our shows. Tuesdays and Thursdays, we do have Survivor Professional Night, which is different, as you know, than Special Guest Night. So those are different. We usually have Survivor Professionals already lined up. And speaking of a NASCA sister, Nancy Brown, I just unmuted your line, so your mic is open. I'd like you to say, we'd like to bring you in the conversation. So.
Hi, good evening, everyone. How are you guys?
I typed West Virginia in Nancy, and that she's the West Virginia ambassador, but she actually lives in Georgia. So I just want to make sure that you know that to know.
Yes, ma'am. How are you all doing?
We're good. How are you?
Can't complain. Hardly ever do.
Okay. So I would love to be trained to be one of the hosts at some point. That would be great. I'm also a survivor as well, but I'm tuning in. I'm trying to be supportive to Miss Holly tonight, and I can't wait to hear her story and just hear about her journey and her recovery and where she is today, you know. So thank you guys for having me, and thank you all for all that you do.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you. Thank you for all that you did. I remember your show, Nancy, because I was on your show that night. And I do remember.
Yeah.
And you know what? Anytime you want to be trained to be a co-host on the show, we're in a training mode right now. So we're doing some training, and we're happy to show you the ropes.
That'd be great.
There's really pretty, you know, to work the studio is relatively simple. If I can do it, seriously, anybody can do it. That would be fantastic.
Co-host. Definitely. I'm interested.
Awesome. That's awesome. Wonderful. I started as a panel member, and I've been an ambassador. And then after, you know, I was, we used to ask our ambassadors to, like, commit to, if they could, you know, one night a week to join and serve on the panel and, like, consistently. And so I was always on, I think it was Wednesday nights, and I just got used to having that night. So it was seamless for me to transition and learn how to be a co-host. And I sort of did it in steps, but you're already on the panel. So I, you know, it was a nice transition, but, and something I always looked forward to and I was used to having on my schedule, as I mentioned. I don't know, you know, Bill, what your thoughts are, but I really liked as an ambassador having an ask of me, you know, because I was willing and happy to serve in that role and proud to be an ambassador for NASCA. And I liked having, you know, some, I think, expectations, if you will, of how I could serve. And serving on the panel once a week and committing to a day, or at least committing to once a week, didn't have to be the same day, but I think that was the preference at the time. I like a little bit of structure around being an ambassador. Not too much, right, because we're all busy lives, but that's another thing, you know, I just wanted to throw out there is if, you know, there are other ambassadors listening or people that want to get more involved with NASCA, even just, you know, trying to pencil in being on the panel one night a week is a great way to continue to get more involved.
That's true. Yep. I put it in my calendar for Mondays. My alarm went off. And so I'm here, so I'm going to try my best to be more committed to showing up and being more supportive.
Oh, that's great.
I think that's also great because when you do serve on the panel, you're able to hear how the interview's going. You're able to learn. So I think that's a great way to start as well.
Absolutely, totally. And I love that I was doing special guest night as well. I love that I would meet about 52 new people a year, right, from – being on the panel once a week. I would check with them on Facebook or social media, and it was just really, I like you said, Nancy, I felt like I always took some pearls away with every show I do. And I love that. Really, you know, helped me to you know, see things from, you know, maybe have different insights. And to your point, it was helpful for me moving along my healing journey. And I never regretted, you know. Then.
Right. As you're helping them heal, it's also helping you to heal. And like you said, you always pick up some tools along the way because they share their tools, and you just keep picking up tools as you're helping people. So it just helps you be more empowered, and that way you're able to help others. You're right?
That is exactly it, exactly it. And I still quote, I still quote certain, NASCA special guests on things that they say. You know, I kind of write down some notes, and I'll remember who said it by their name, and I'll remember exactly what they said. I'll think of them too every time I, say that phrase in my head, But there's just been some great, just some great teachers. I hope I didn't scare Holly off.
No, I don't think so. What I'm going to do is, I didn't want to do it without telling you, but I'm going to go call her. And so for a minute here, I won't be available, all right? So I'll go call her and find out what's going on. All right.
I wonder if her phone's on.
Yes. I was in Europe. I was in Greece for the month of July for the most part. And I brought my phone. I only, I only turned on the cellular when I was trying to do the show from Greece, and it didn't work very well. But I got back to the States. My phone did not want to work. My phone has been, the cell phone reception's been bad. I dropped the show, the host, a few times until he freaked out. So let me know if you can't handle it first of all.
So while you were hosting, the phone just blacked out?
Yeah, the phone is like it's a call failure, right? And so I could see myself go off the studio. But luckily, it doesn't stop the show. talk about having a heart attack in the middle of the show. This is technology. We're getting used to it with COVID and Zoom calls and the internet. And, internet, the Wi-Fi gets bogged down or, the data.
Yes, it happens.
And it just is what it is, right? And you just kind of have
it
to.
It happens.
Exactly.
I know. So was it because you were out of the country, something, there was a glitch into your phone? Was it ever since you went to Greece and came back you started having these problems with the phone?
Yes. And I mean, I went to the Verizon store. I shut it down. I updated the software. It's like I didn't want to come back from Greece, and apparently my phone didn't want to come back either, but.
Right.
Gotta get to reality. But if anybody knows, if he has any tips, just call in, let me know, because they couldn't even figure it out at Verizon. But, I've got an iPhone 11 because I broke my iPhone 6, so I'm up to, the latest iPhone, so I don't know what else I can do.
How was Greece? How was
Greece?
I heard they have beautiful beaches. Did you go to the beach?
Yes, I did. My father is Greek, and his family's from a small island. It's not really a tourist destination. I mean, it's not like near Mykonos, but I think it's as pretty, but it's just more quiet. But they have some of the most amazing beaches. So I was just and luckily with COVID, I can still work from Greece, on my computer for work. So it was really having to figure out how to go on with business in COVID. So I was able to work, every day a little bit and then relax. We had the beaches were fantastic.
Right.
The food is farm to table. People are just really just, it's a small island, very just down to earth and simple, which was perfect. A lot of family history there. Good, happy, fond memories, which is nice when you're healing from, multi-generational, abuse within your family lineage. So it was really great. No complaints. I feel like we're very fortunate to be able to do that. So, I would definitely say it's my happy place. Although on the island that we're from, poor Bill, Athens, I actually did the show from Athens. it wasn't too bad. I was able to do the it was 3 a.m. in Athens when it's the show's on. So that was no problem, right? I just had to get up in the middle of the night. But on the island, they actually shut Wi-Fi and cellular data at 3:30 in the morning. So poor Bill. I know. I talked to him like, what is up? So just letting you
it
know.
It was fine.
Yeah, organization at
tell
NASA.
What.
Yeah, but.
I have encountered many different situations. One of the first ones that was kind of funny was I was in a hospital, and I got in the elevator to the hospital, and, you know, when the doors closed, I got cut off from the show, and I was the host. But when I got to the bottom floor, I called back in, and the show was still going on. That's how I learned that you can do that.
Yeah. Oh. Exactly. Yeah. Thank God, right? Thankfully.
Yeah.
I still had a 504 area code that called
right.
in.
I'm looking it
five, up. I'm sorry, 504-940. Mask, who's calling?
This is John.
Hi, John.
Hello. Hold on. Stop
hello.
About German Shepherd. All right. I'm here.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
We're calling in, John. I have everybody's mic open because we're waiting. Our special guest was on the line and then she dropped. And
did you put him up in the room? What was that? What happened to her?
I just said, well, she's on the line and then she dropped off and then we're just waiting for
okay.
to call back in.
Okay, can you give me a brief real quick? Because I can't get on the internet. I have no idea who it is or what it's about. Can you fill me in?
I'll read her bio. Hopefully she'll be able to call back in. So her name is Holly Baby, and she's from Saginaw, Michigan. She was sexually abused from the age 5 to 10 by an older male cousin. He was a violent young man who later killed 4 men and is currently serving life in a super prison. She didn't speak of her abuse to anyone until she was 26 years old. When she finally told her when she was 34 years old, she felt so much shame, guilt, disgust, and fear about it that she feared anyone knowing so deeply that she really couldn't discuss. She couldn't bring herself to discuss with anyone, and she held in all the pain, which she said now crushes her because she has a daughter who's 6 years old. And she cannot wrap her head around someone her age holding all that in. She stated that shortly after her... Oh, go on. Sorry.
Has she tried to call back in yet? Can you tell?
No.
No? Okay.
And Bill, I know you're going to try to get
I've
her.
I've left her a message, a voice message, and I've also texted her number, the same number she was using. And there has been no reply yet.
Where is she living at now?
She's still actually living in
Saginaw, Michigan.
In Michigan.
Michigan.
I don't know if she was down here. I could understand, but I don't know what's going on. Maybe it was too much for her. You know, do you think it was too much for her, or is she not that type of person? Do you know? I've seen people back out. Well, I mean, I can kind of fill y'all in on a lot of good stuff if y'all want to hear it for now. You know, we're finally about to get power here, okay? So I should have my internet up anytime, you know, within the next day or two. I just got finished doing community service work for a family that is a Mexican family that had kids, 3 kids, a grandma, and a wife with no men, okay? A pecan tree 80 foot tall and a oak tree about 60 foot tall fell on their house, literally, okay? Mm-hmm. Went through the structure into the bedrooms. Could have killed anybody instantly, but nobody got hurt. So I've been over all day doing this for free because I got in touch with the landlord last night, and I'm going to call him again tonight, but he is 80 years old. Okay, and he doesn't have any insurance on the house. But right now is the time. You know, this is hurricane time for us. So, yeah, I mean, they run around. They came and did my claim today, you know. Well, this guy needs a whole new roof replaced, no question about it. You know, plus he's got structure damage all on the fascia boards and the overhangs. And, you know, it's hard to tell. But he told these Mexican kids in the mama to go find somewhere else to live, you know. I said, no, that's not going to happen. You're not going to throw these kids on the street. There's three of them that are, what, Wes, you think they about, what, four? Four or five, something like that, you know, and a little teenage girl and a 12-year-old boy, you know. And this 12-year-old boy, let me tell you something, this guy helped me all day long because it's taken me since 8 o'clock this morning, literally, and I just finished up when I called in. That's how long it's been taking me all day. So I had to go pick up a friend of mine's son who's, you know, capable of working around this atmosphere because he's been through it before. Plus, he's been with our camp, so he's very experienced, you know, as a young man. But this little 12-year-old boy, let me tell you, he kicked in and he put himself in gear, and he was dragging limbs all the way out to the road. And I just, you know, it was a good thing. We had neighbors come by, so people now are giving him ice and food. I brought him food in the whole 5-gallon jug, like we call it Kentwood water, you know, like it's spring water in a bottle, 5 gallons. Mm-hmm. And so I gave it to him, you know, that I gave it to him 3 days ago. So I've been checking up on him, and now the whole neighborhood's checking up on him, you know. So they're fine. They're not going anywhere. And I got the whole roof talked now, you know. So now they can clean up on the inside because the insulation, the ceiling caved in, it is nasty in there. Wet. Oh, my God. It's almost unlivable, but now they have, at least they can live in something, you know, and start cleaning up on the inside and getting all that stuff out. So it's been a very rewarding day for me because the police showed up. They knew I was there. I'm not charging a dime. I spent all day over there. I used my own equipment, you know, because I was a contractor for almost 30 years. So I got everything I need. That's why I keep my stuff. I'm retired now, but look, if I got to get my butt up and go, even though I'm injured, I'm going to do something for somebody, you know, just to make myself feel good. So that's what this is all about for me. I didn't have to do it, but I did it. Nobody else was going to do it, you know. Oh, there's people
well,
over
God
here.
Bless you.
You know, so I kicked in and got it done, and they all finished 100%. So
wow. That
was great. So
thank
I feel
you for
good.
Your service.
My heart, you know, really does. Cool. I feel good about the decisions I made today. I feel good about knowing what I did. You know, just everything is just it's a soothing feeling that I needed when I was abused, that nobody was around for me then, you know, to take me and help me. You know, the Archdiocese did not help me, you know, at all. In fact, they wanted to push me away, just like when they send their pedophiles to other schools and stuff because they don't want to deal with them. That's how they treated me. You know, I don't treat people that way, you know. I take care of people.
Right.
If they got a problem,
right.
I want to help. I might not be able to cure the problem. At least I can help, you know. And if I don't have the answer, maybe I know somebody that does, you know. I don't want to be one of these know-it-alls, but at least I'll help somebody, you know, by guiding them in the right direction, you know, if I can't do it. So, you know, and by the way, I do want to say that I spoke to remember Luke from last week?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I talked to Luke today for quite a while, and he finally got in touch with me. And we're going to get him rolling because he has a statute of limitations that ends in April, okay? In April. He's lucky, by 1 year. So it's less than a year. You know, so he's got about 6 months to do his thing, but I'm trying to hook him up with the right attorneys in Illinois, you know. So I'm getting in touch with my attorneys down here to hopefully they know somebody up in that area that does what we need, you know, for him because he needs to do his thing, you know. And I want to help him through the whole process.
Yeah,
he's staying. He's staying. Yeah. Uh-huh. Go ahead, Penelope.
Oh, he sent me a Facebook message saying that he was very appreciative of the fact that he hooked up with you and that you were helping him. And, I mean, he was so appreciative. And, John, by the way, just let you know, it's on the internet. So, obviously, you know, Bill's on the phone. But also Nancy Brown, She's from Georgia, but she's our West Virginia NASCA ambassador. So just that you heard another female voice. She was making a comment on the, one of your comments.
You talking about Jessica? You talking about Jessica Brown?
No, actually, Nancy Brown. So different first name, but same last name. So Nancy is our NASCA ambassador. She's our emperor, West Virginia. She lives in Georgia. She's on as well.
Okay. Well, that's great. That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
But this is what I love about Luke.
Anyway, I was confused about Luke because when I wrote his name down, I had Mike in front of it, and I'm thinking Mike. And he said Luke. I'm like, I was confused. And he said, we just met the other night. I said, oh, I have all my notes written on him, and I had Mike written down. Apparently, he goes by Luke. You know, so I had it confused at first.
Because Mike Chapman was also on the line from NASCA. He's another NASCA member, and he knows Luke.
Okay.
He called to support him. But, yeah, that's, I think Mike Chapman, maybe he worked on it, because he was on the call last week as well. So you're not losing it.
He's from Indiana. And not Illinois, Indiana.
Yeah, I have all my notes on him. You know, it was Mike. For some reason, maybe that was a cousin that was supporting him named Mike. Okay. And then I have Luke written. But, yeah, I got all the notes on him. I'm born in Indiana, in Illinois. I got it all written down right here. So I'm going to try to help him with anything I can. And as long as I can find out what's going on with the statue. If they're going to keep the same statue until his time, then we're going to have to abide by what's going on, you know, unless they're moving into the House of Representatives, you know, first. I don't know. I got to find out. So I'm going to find out who is the rep, the state rep in that area that I need to contact and find out if he's going to present a bill, you know, and hopefully change to to abolish it, period. I mean, everybody else, we did it in Louisiana. I think everybody should do it. There's 25 states now, 26 maybe, you know, and Pennsylvania's coming up like soon, you know, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's right now, like September, I don't know, you know, it's coming real soon. I don't know if maybe Bill knows about that, because I know he's familiar with Pennsylvania and stuff.
It comes around annually, you know. And the only thing you have to worry about is when the law is finally adjusted, they're going to put a window in. Is you have to, you want to file then. You don't want to wait till after the, you know, at the end of the window. You want to file then, because then you're in. As soon as you file, you're in. So, you know, I'm not sure if he's from, his abuse was in Indiana, where he lives, or if it was in Illinois, which is what you're saying. But you have to, obviously, you have to bring the case in the same locale or state that you were molested in. So if he was, if it was done to him in Illinois, then he has to go according to Illinois' statutes. And if it was done in Indiana, according to Indiana's statute of limitations. So you have to know that. But as soon as you can, you know, you want to file, even though it may take a while for the thing to come up. As once you're filed, you know,
right.
You're in the system, you're in the process. Okay. We were talking about being a service, which was kind of cool when you called in. I know you hadn't heard much of the show there, and you started talking about how you were of service all day long. And it wasn't a service necessarily in terms of, you know, child abuse victims. But, you know, frankly, it doesn't really matter. I think being a service is being a service. And if you, you know, are putting yourself out, you know, kind of in an unselfish way to help somebody who needs it, you know, who is in pain or in trouble or confused or whatever, it doesn't have to be for child abuse to count towards our change of character, you know, that we go through in the process of healing. So I wanted to say that. One thing we were talking about, John, which I know you've already indicated you're interested in, was trying to get people trained to be trailers and hosts on this series, which Nancy is also interested in, Nancy Brown. So I have a little list of folks who have indicated they would like to get trained. Now we just have to set it all up, because I was saying I'm the designated trailer now because we don't have enough people otherwise. So I want to get some of you guys trained.
Get my phone to go on to the Bluetooth because I can't even find my ears. My you know, when I plug in, I usually have my earphones in and stuff, my earbuds, but I can't find them right now. I got stuff everywhere in my house. It's a mess. But so I can hear better, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm getting a connection to it. For some reason, it won't pick up.
Well, we're hearing you fine.
Well, I think, you know, Bill, to your point, and John, you know, to your point, I know we were talking about service and earlier with Nancy, but I think, you know, when you're a child, when your home environment is invaded for any reason, when you lose your sense of security, right, which is your home, it is a huge trauma. I mean, I know I experienced that, a lot of people experienced that with the abuse that we had, if we had the abuse in the home. But I think, a hurricane and trees falling and destroying where you live and not knowing, you know, not having a place to go where you can feel safe and secure is so harmful. I think it hurts, right, to lose that stability as a child. And I think, you know, what you did today is you can resonate with losing that sense of stability and a place where you can truly land and feel grounded and secure. And that's what you did. You gave, you know, that family and those children that security, you know, and the fact that they did not have, they could go back to their home, which I think is just incredible. Absolutely incredible. So I don't think we're going to get our guests back on the line. I'm okay taking ownership of that. I was trying to slow her down and ask her questions. I think she's ready to get her story out. And I was trying to go through our trying to kind of ask some questions, put some context within the family and a little more about the family. So it could have been me. I apologize. And hopefully.
No, it's not you. I mean, I'm sure. Yeah.
Well,
I don't know. Somebody, she might have to just reschedule maybe to help with something, you know. We can work with her, of course. It's hard to tell. I mean, has she answered Bill's text at all? Because that's something. Text messages should go through. I mean, besides that,
could be having connection issues. Never know.
I texted her and I left a voicemail too.
Yeah, maybe her phone died.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility, you know. I don't know. It's hard to tell.
Well, so we have to come back. That means that we have one of those empty dates for a week or so from now, 10 days from now, that we'll be able to slide her into. How's that?
Right. That would be great.
For all we know, she's in Greece, and she doesn't have any cell reception. We were talking about this as well. And, you know, one thing I love about NASCA, this was when I was in Greece, you know, I told Bill once I had my business cards, I don't go anywhere without them, including when I travel. And, you know, I can give anyone in any country, anywhere, my card, because now an international organization. Obviously, it's a website. Yeah. Anybody from anywhere can access it. But, you know, we've had so many people call in during the shows from different continents, from different countries. And NASCA is an international organization. We have support in all these foreign countries. And that's what I love about this organization as well. is the infrastructure of support and resources, the depth of it, and logistically, I mean, we are worldwide and international, and I can't tell you the response in Greece, and I meet people in Greece, and I was telling them that I do the shows. I mean, they were so interested, and everybody either knew something or they just got a look in their eye where they you could tell that it was like, oh, you know, I could benefit from that, and they would take the card and take the information. So I never go anywhere without my NASCAR business cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is convenient. Mine has my email address on it too. Does yours? Because I have my personal number, and the show number, and my email address. So,
exactly.
Yeah. And then I did want to share with y'all too that in the news a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, the same guy, that was raped by Brignat too. He's much younger than me. Okay, since there were criminal, charges brought against Brignat before he died, and he was convicted but never served because he died. But we're the only two. Me, his name is Michael DiBenedetto. Okay, and he's not one of these to come and be broadcasting but he'll go on the news, but he don't want to show his face, and it's okay, understand. But at the same time, I'm the opposite, okay? So mine is two separate cases, okay? His has already been put on the news. Mine's coming next, okay? Mine's going to be, because if it wasn't, what happened was is that they hid evidence against us whenever we took Brignat to court way back in 1978, okay, that he got kicked out of a school named Christian Brothers here, okay, and the reason for that was that we think that he did something to somebody there, okay. So the priest that was there recommended Brignat not to become a deacon, and he's the only one that can make him become a deacon, okay, at the time, because that's the way the system works. Well, he recommended him not to, and he still became one, okay? Well, the evidence that they didn't bring into court, the fact that he did touch somebody at Christian Brothers, and they hid the evidence against us, and we found it, okay? Plus, we have the priest that is still alive. He lives in Miami. The lawyers flew to Miami, okay? Got a signature off of him, and because of his signature on that piece of paper, he re-signed another one saying that he wanted to never let Brignat even become a deacon to begin with, okay, and that he was the only one at the time that could stop him from. But then they moved Brignat, you see. When they move it to a different area, then there's another bishop that takes over, right? So that's what happened, and that's how he became a deacon, and that's how he got me. So, that's just some stuff I'm letting you know about that going down, and it's going to be a major, major lawsuit. It's going to be all over the news, big time, and I can't wait. It's coming next. Actually, it should have been right now. It should have been this week, but everything's shut down. It's coming around now. I'll tell you what, Entergy is doing such a great job. I mean, you have no idea how many telephone poles we have down. It's every block, somewhere. So the trucks that are down here, by the thousands. I've never seen such an organized, effort of any hurricane in my whole entire life, and I've been through many. They're just getting it down, I think after Katrina we learned a big lesson of the way the system should be ran, So now it's become local justice is what we call it, because if anybody comes in, we have the right, to stop them from looting, So the police where I live at are down my street at least once every hour. And I walk my German Shepherd, okay, and I have a spotlight. My German Shepherd is an attack dog, okay. He will bite somebody if I send him. So, and they know who I am. The police do. I'm very, well known here.
And I actually met, with the sheriff here. His name is Tim Walker, and Tim gave me the right. And so he basically deputized me to have the right to patrol the neighborhoods at night as long as I want, you know. So that's why my sleeping pattern's been off, you know, just because stuff at nighttime, you know, we need to do all we work and during the day so much, we don't have time to do clothes, you know, and cook and all of this. So when we finish up at night, you know, yeah, we starve and we hungry. And, you know, we eat, and with the hurricane situation, I'm on generator right now. You know, I should have power within the next couple of days, I hope. And my wife is coming home tomorrow, time in a week, and what is it, a week and a day, 2 days, you know. So I did get to see him Saturday. Saturday was the first time I got to see my family in a whole week, you know, and that was getting to me bad, real bad. You know, and I was getting low on medication because I take Lexapro and Cymbalta, and I was out of Lexapro, you know, and I was getting emotional, you know, really emotional, tears and all, you know. I'm like, where's my medicine at? You know, so I had to go digging for it, and I did find some, so I'm okay, you know, because I can't get my pharmacy right here is closed, you know. I'd have to go and have it transferred to another pharmacy. And I don't know, every pharmacy I've seen around here, the line is around a block, okay? I'm not going to sit in that right now, you know? I shouldn't have to. But I just don't have patience for that. You know, when you have PTSD, I do have it, you know? I don't have patience for stuff, you know? It's just something I got to control myself on because I want to do it. I want it done now, you know what I'm saying? I can't. My patience is just like, you know.
You bring up an interesting topic, and that is, and I'm interested to hear from Nancy, too, on this, is that, you know, we all are on our healing journey, you know, keep going forward on our healing journey. And so, you know, when we have these roadblocks, if you will, and a lot of times, sometimes, like, they're out of our control. I mean, what kind of tools do you have at your disposal? And when you are running into a roadblock, your healing journey, you know, whether it's natural disaster and you can't get hands on medication, you don't want to, you know, you don't want your cough levels to go down, so that you have to, you know, retitrate yourself back up to stay on course. But in terms of other things too, whether they're, you know, other modalities that you're used to having for help and self-care and support. Nancy, what do you do? I'm just curious, so what do you have any tips or strategies that you use when you're faced with some challenges along the way?
Well, for me, I have, I pray. I'll go and look for inspirational quotes. I'll look for scriptures. For me, I opted not to get medication.
Mm-hmm.
I did see my doctor, and we talked about all of that, and I know I do have post-traumatic stress disorder.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up doing the cannabis oil.
Yes, I do.
But in Georgia, I do have my license down here, but here in Georgia, they sensory, so that's been very, very stressful, to be quite honest with you, because I do feel that I need some support. Like, I need more support, but I really am concerned about taking medication just from some of my friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you this, is that I have been on several types of medication over the years, okay? And I found that Lexapro is the best thing I've ever found, you know?
Lexapro.
And everybody... and everybody that's in my association, which is SCSA, Richard Women, he takes it. Just about every guy that's in, you know, in the male side, because I do the men's support division, they all take it, you know, and it really, you know, helps me. There's no question about it. You know, it takes away the sad emotions, the depression. It actually makes me focus.
Because I'm having a hard time with that. I'm like
so
off of focus. Oh my god!
I did.
I was spinning around so much, I was like losing my mind. It was like
I
forgot
can't
to
study.
Do, you know,
and
I, yeah, I mean, it was crazy, you know.
Yeah.
But now I have a much better focus on direction in my life. You know, in other words, when I wake up in the morning, you know, I know that either I have a podcast tonight or I have a meeting or, you know, something. And what I'm doing through the day, and now I feel like I'm in control, you know. It's like if I put my phone somewhere and I go do something else, I'm like, all right, where's my phone at? You know, I'm like freaking out. You know, well, now I know where it's at. You know, if that's just little things that I was doing. It's like my wife would tell me something, right? And I would forget, like, oh, I'm sorry, baby, I forgot all about that, you know. And that's what was happening.
Yeah, I can't forget.
It's like my brain just was not functioning properly, you know. And what I found out is that it's basically a chemical imbalance, you know, of what happened to us. And that's what it really gets down to, because it's trauma.
So it does create a chemical imbalance.
Yes. It's basically trauma-related injury, you know.
Right.
And therefore, if you really want to get down to the basics of it, it's brain damage, okay? And that's what it really is. Because, and not only that, it also affects people physically, okay? Because if you are young and you have this happen to you, your brain doesn't allow you to heal it because of the emotions and the trauma that set in as a young person, you know?
Right.
And now, people think that I was a pro athlete at one time. Now I have wires in my body. I have a spinal stimulator in me, okay? I was taking opioids for 8 years, something like that, and got off of them finally. And now I take another one. It's called Belbuca, which is a little square pad, and you put it inside of your gum, and you stick it to your lip in the inside, and it kind of melts away, you know, and it tastes like a mint. And it's really, really good, really good, you know. And you don't have no pills. It comes in a little square pack. And, you know, and one of them is all good for me all day, you know.
And what does that one do, Belbuca?
Belbuca is
that's
pain.
That's good for what, the focus? Okay, pain. Okay.
Pain, yeah, strictly pain. That's what that is.
Okay.
I am a chronic pain, you know, person. I have bad sciatica. I've had 7 operations on my spine, okay? So what happens to me is that I have fibromyalgia. I have PTSD. I have stenosis. I have arthritis in my spine. You know, I've had this spinal stimulator in my body since I've been 47. I'm 55 now, okay? So, you know, I've talked to several people in Houston about the effects of physical damage, you know, caused through trauma, you know, of childhood sex abuse, you know, and this is exactly what happened to me. And I know other people too, you know, Stephen McAvoy, same guy, you know, just to tell you a brief history of what happened to me, okay, I was raped by a guy named George Brignac. He was a deacon, okay, and we took him to court, okay, he got acquitted on that, and I have eyewitnesses of kids and school members that saw him doing this to me, and he still got off, okay? So after that, guess how many kids he got a hold of after me? 25. 25, okay?
The same abuser?
The same abuser got a hold of 25 kids. Can you believe it? And if he would have been convicted in my trial, he would have not touched any kids through, you know, the archdiocese system anyway. He might have been shipped somewhere else and probably would. Yes. You know, well, he was a deacon, you know. So he was in the hands of the archdiocese. And whenever you become a deacon, you know, you basically are, you know, in the archdiocese system. You know, they do the, you know, the readings, you know, they handle the altar boys, and that was his specialty. That's how he got a hold of all the kids, you know. Well, he was defrocked in 88, okay. He had a twin brother who was a priest, okay, a good guy. He was a good guy, I have to say. Twin brother looked just like him, but he never did anything to anybody, you know. But his brother let him come to a school and still helping with the kids and doing the altar boy, you know, services. He wasn't supposed to be anywhere around. And this is in 2018, okay? So he snuck back in. Well, you know, overall, you know, and think about this, and I feel so bad about this, is that he got a hold of 20, 25 kids after me, you know? And I have to live with that all my life. It ain't my fault. I know it's not my fault, but these kids could have been saved, you know?
It's definitely
not
your fault, right?
If the system was done. Yeah, well, right. You don't realize the judge in my trial was a major Catholic fundraiser guy. The sheriff at the time in Jefferson Parish, all about the archdiocese, you know. And anytime you take on the archdiocese back in the 70s, you didn't have a chance, you know, because everybody, it's all money, you know.
Of course not, right.
I mean, you know, that's what it all comes down to. Well, I'm the one that suffered, you know. I had to move out of the area for 15 years. I couldn't live here, you know. I got shut down. People around here knew what happened to me, and they wouldn't talk to me because the moms and the parents were telling the kids to stay away from me because of the stuff that we were doing with Brignac around the school. So I lost all my friends, every one of them, you know, when I was 10. Imagine that, you know. That's when you get your friends. You know, that's your friends for life. Well, I lost them all, every one of them. They wouldn't talk to me anymore, everything, you know. So, you know, the depression, the isolation kicked in.
Right.
I mean, I didn't know what was happening to me. You know, I was freaking out. I wound up moving to Tennessee, you know, I had nobody in Tennessee. I mean, no family. I was playing baseball finally. You know, that's that was me. You know, I was a baseball player. And that's when I met a girl, and then I wound up having kids up there, two of them. So I stayed and raised them, you know. But in the meantime,
John,
my parents are here in Louisiana. Yes, sir.
John, I want to just take us back a little ways from what you were talking about. I think you called it Del Buca?
Yeah, Bell Buca.
And what was the...
Yeah, it's called... I can tell you exactly how it's spelled. I got it right here. No, it's B as in boy. B-E-L-B-U-C-A, Del Buca.
And the other one was what?
Lexapro. Lexapro is the one, you know, for the depression and everything else, you know. That's the best medication I've ever found. And I've taken
Lexapro?
A lot of food. I take
yeah.
Lexapro, and I take Cymbalta, too. Lexapro and Cymbalta together. So you can ask your doctor about that.
Okay. That's the point I want to make, though, is that we don't want to recommend stuff on the air because it may not be right for certain. Okay, but I don't want people to hear this as NASCA's representation that we recommend using these drugs or any drugs. I mean, it's up to you if you want to use drugs.
Absolutely.
Because
we
all have our different symptoms, but I would warn that
you want to
see a medical professional, and perhaps you would get these prescribed. But you don't. I don't want to say that we're recommending them.
Oh no!
We're not doctors.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you clarified that. And that's the truth. That's exactly right, Bill. You know, I'm just saying what I take, and I would recommend it if somebody would talk to their doctor first. Okay.
Yeah,
and that's the main thing about this. People are different, okay? They have different types of reactions, different. So, you know, the doctor has to determine what your medication is. No question about it. Don't go. You're not going to be able to get this without a prescription anyway, but you can talk to your doctor about it and ask him about certain medications that people have been on that have experienced in this area. You know, that they can get information on and possibly help their life, you know, because I know it's helped me tremendously, no question about it. So, you know, I'm not going to tell somebody to go take something, you know, but what I can say is that this is what I have taken and that your doctor should be the one to recommend anything to you, you know, no question about it. No question about that, you know, so...
So I just wanted to make sure people understand when they hear these shows, and this individual is talking about his or her experience, that's not necessarily the gospel for all of NASCA. In fact, the way NASCA is set up, We don't have. What is that? What's all that?
I don't know what that is. I hear a lot of background noise.
Just scratching this. NASCA doesn't want to be the arbiter of the kind of recovery you use, you know, what you have to do or whatever, you know, whether you take drugs or don't take drugs. We mentioned marijuana before, you know, a lot of people are using it, other people can't or don't, and so forth. These are these are personal choices that I believe should be made in the company of a doctor. You know, so but we do we all agree that recovery from childhood trauma is possible, and that there are lots of paths, and some involve, you know, drugs and perhaps, and some don't. But there's all kinds of ways to be on, as Carol calls it, a healing journey, and benefit from from moving forward, just telling your secrets and so forth. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But definitely for me, I definitely I see my doctor and, you know, certain choices as far as medication. I've always talked to my doctor and have it in my records and never have made any choices without my doctor. But I do agree that everyone should always check with their doctors and see what works best for them. But for me, like I said, some of the inspirational quotes and joining groups and therapy and all of that, it does help because you pick up tools from hearing everybody else's story. That's one of the things that Penelope and I were talking about earlier. You pick up tools from hearing other people's stories and from talking to other people. You pick up extra tools to help you along the journey.
Mm-hmm.
Along the way. And that's why, like you, even sharing your story right now, some of the things that you were saying, I was getting a lot from it because, you know, there's things that I never heard about. And when you're talking about people in ministry in certain areas, there's ways that people do certain things or hide certain things or cover certain things. So you sharing your story is going to definitely be helping so many people. Thank you for doing that today.
Even though
you didn't get to finish, but that was great.
That's okay. Look, listen, if you ever want to read the whole story, I can tell you, just go to www.scsaorg.org, and you got to put in www on that, okay? And you can read my story. It's John Anderson, and my story's on there, you know, and that way you can read it all in detail. You know, it's just something that it shows exactly how the Archdiocese operates. I am the perfect example of a kid that was abused young, shipped the pedophile around, okay, after, and he abused other people after. Why I struggled, okay? They would not let me back into school, okay? So I had to go to other schools. And do you know I wound up going to 6 different schools after I was abused? Because everywhere I went, people knew me. You know, people knew what happened to me. Can you imagine that? So I'm like, Dad, Mom, I can't go here. You know, I got friends that they won't talk to me anymore. You know, I'm crying. I don't even want to be in class, you know. So I finally found a school my junior year. It was a small school. Wound up graduating barely. But my athletic skills were off the charts, you know. So I did get a scholarship to college, but I couldn't pass. You know, because I didn't have one course in algebra. Can you believe that? Growing up, not even one.
Wow.
Nope. And I had no calculus, no nothing. You know, so I went to college like I'd never been to school before, you know. And all of a sudden I get hit with all this work. And now, you know, yes, I'm a great athlete, but being the fastest one on the team, got all this, you know, professional, you know, guys looking at me and all of this and that, but I can't even pass school, you know. So it killed my career. It really did. So I had to, you know, play semi-pro ball for 20 years, and which I did great in and made, you know, some money at it and stuff, but it ruined my life. You know, there's no question about it, you know. I had to move away from here. All my friends, my brother, I never got to see him grow up. You know, by the time I moved out of here, he was only 5. you know. And I moved to Tennessee because I couldn't handle it here. Everywhere I turn around, you go to a store, you go to McDonald's, you go anywhere, and somebody's there, you know, you have to go the other way because, you know, they don't want to talk to you. I'm thinking, how are they looking at me? Are they looking at me like I'm a bad person because of what I did, you know? So this is what my mind's thinking back then, you know. But nowadays, I'll tell you, things have swapped around because I came forward at a young age, you know, and I did the right thing back then. My mom was the advocate from you know where. She was in her third trimester of her pregnancy with my brother at the time. And still taking, you know, the archdiocese to court. Do you know they subpoenaed us 10 times over this because they wanted to run us off, you know? My mom kept going back in every single time, So we have all that paperwork from back then, you know, still. So this is part of the case, you know, and the fact that they hid information, the fact that the bishop came. And he went into the quarters with the judge before the case and all this and that. So our attorney had to go get those two out of the judge's chambers because the bishop and him were talking before the case, and we don't know what was going on. So the lawyer leaves. This is what I remember. The lawyer leaves, and he goes and gets them, and he's arguing with them, why are y'all talking in the chambers? You know, you're not supposed to do that. Well, sure enough, you know, this guy walks in full regalia. I mean, he's got the hat on. The white coat, got the big green with gold, you know, hanging off of him, the whole 9 yards, you know. It looked like the Pope walking in there, you know. Of course, he had, you know, 4 or 5 other ones with him that was support, you know, for Brignac. They're supporting a pedophile, okay. Well, we got me sitting on the stand. We have 2 witnesses that are 10 years old, 9 years old, that saw what happened, and this guy still gets acquitted. Not to mention I had many, many witnesses because the kids used to put garbage cans in the school hallway. We had glass, transom glasses, like you can look in up top from the halls into the class. They used to get the garbage cans and stand on top of them and watch this guy, you know, do things to me, you know. Seriously. I mean, everybody knew. You know, the whole community knew what was going on with me. And so that's how it affected my life so bad because I couldn't go anywhere without somebody turning their back on me. I had no support at all, you know, so it was hard, really, really hard for me, you know, and I never really got over it, I think, until, you know, it still gets to me today, but nothing like it used to, you know. It took a long, long time, on the doctors, you know, for sure, and I tell you what, the best thing that ever happened to me, and NASCA is a part of that. Okay, NASCA,
right.
CSA, and I used to run SNAP here in New Orleans, okay? Me and Kevin Bourgeois were the SNAP leaders. Kevin left and went to work for the Archdiocese without telling me, right behind my back. He lied to me straight out, you know? And so it affected SNAP here in New Orleans. So I just want to say something about SNAP, okay? Let me get this straight with SNAP. I love SNAP. I don't have anything personal against SNAP, okay? Let's get that straight. But what happened with us, because of what Kevin did, was a very, very hard situation. So I decided to leave SNAP. And me and Richard Women started the SCSA, which is Survivors of Childhood Sex Abuse, okay? So now we are registered. We are a nonprofit. We have a committee. We have lawyers, doctors, police on the committee. I'm the vice president. Richard is the president, and we are worldwide, too. You know, we have meetings every week, which I love. And we also have a women's division, too, you know. But what I'm getting at is that with NASCA, to me, and doing what y'all are doing, it's beautiful. You know, I feel so, so good every time that I'm with you all, and I want to be with y'all forever. There's no question about it. And, you know, and along with my association, we can all work together, you know. But getting the message out and telling your story, that's where it's at, you know. Because when you do that, every time you do that, that black, nasty, what I call soul murder, it starts to leave you slowly and slowly and slowly, you know. And you get more confident about it. You get more, you know, like now I'm not scared. I can stand on a mountain and scream about it now, you know. And now I got friends backing me because I am who I am today. And some of those students, I have to say, came out and contacted me and told me that you know, they thanking me for what I'm doing. They knew what happened to me back then. They were sorry it happened to me. And this is just in the past year. People I haven't heard from in 45 years. It's been 45 years, you know. So I feel good about where I'm at today, you know, and I want to keep doing it because I need to help people. I need to make sure people don't go through what I did, suicide, you know. I mean, I attempted it 3 times, you know. I don't know how I made it through it, but I did. And, you know, I don't want people to go that route, you know, because it's a dark world. It's a very, very dark world, you know, and I don't ever want to be back in that myself. So, you know, experience to me, it's time, and it's telling stories, and it's also getting with other survivors, okay? That's the key, because other people don't understand. They will never understand what a survivor is, or a warrior, as you say, you know? And without other, there isn't anything. You know, as a team, we are so strong. You know, we worldwide, everybody is. We got people listening from Australia, Africa, New Zealand, Canada, you know, Japan. I know a lot of you know Ms. Suzuki over there. So, you know, I think telling your story and experiencing that with other people is the best thing that can ever happen to you. You know, it's actually sharing the worst thing in your life that's ever happened to you so you can get over it, the trauma effects, you know?
You know?
So, you know, this is what we help people with. So each step, you can't do it overnight, you know? It takes a team effort. It takes a lot of different areas of people's knowledge to accept the fact that, yes, you were abused and it was not your fault, you know, by no means. And what's that?
Let me take us back again, and this is one thing I wanted.
Okay.
This is a constructive criticism tonight, but we, you know, when we come upon issues that of child abuse, we should allow the panel to discuss them because that's really what we're here for. And the one thing
that's true.
That I mean, I've jumped back a couple of times. I'm going to do it one more time because this is a really, really important point. And that is about the brain damage. Now, we talked about that a long time ago, but I've been waiting for an opportunity to say, you know, I used to talk about this all the time, John, and I got to talk about it more because I forget. Yeah,
sure.
I forget that I haven't been saying it. But the human brain, fortunately, has a tremendous capacity to heal because it's compared to how much gray matter we use, there's a whole lot left that we don't use. It's like 10%, you know, we use, and 90% we don't, or something like that, 80-20. The point is that when we're growing up, the brain is developing in childhood, and it develops all the way till our mid-20s. And that means that as it's developing, they're the same years that we are traumatized as children. And when we're traumatized, our brain does not develop the same way a normal person's brain. And when we are finished the development of our brain by 25 or 26, it is, you know, there are certain parts of the brain that have overgrown. There are certain parts of the brain that haven't grown enough. There are lots of passageways, what do you call them, connections that really don't meet each other, you know, very well. And so we have to actually train ourselves because just like any other body part, you know, you can kind of exercise the brain. But if you don't exercise, it's not going to change, but you can. And you can actually repair some of those things that have gone wrong in our youth and in our 30s and so forth. And you bring it back. I don't know if you can bring it all the way back. Because I don't think I'm all the way back, you know? but I'm pretty far along the way, and
you know, with all these.
But I've been conscious of that for a long time. This is, we are brain damaged, we are.
Yeah.
But it's again not our fault, and there's stuff we can do about it,
you know, if we want to apply ourselves, you know, so that's the good news.
Right.
Yeah. And the thing about it too, is that there are therapies out there, you know, like the eye therapies and things like that, you know. I don't know what's going to work for everybody. It depends on the situation, I think, and it depends on the doctor, too. You know, and I'll always say that the first doctor you see is might not be the one for you, you know. So if you go see a doctor, make sure that doctor is the person that is going to take care of you. You know, they have empathy for you, things like that. They definitely want to help you, you know, where you got other doctors that, you know, they automatically say going to be, well, all right, you know, we're just going to do this and do that. No, find somebody that cares, you know, and that you feel comfortable with. And the same thing with just therapists, you know. I've seen people go and find and look for 10 different therapists until they find that one, you know. So it depends on the situation. But they have, you know, the eye movement therapies.
EMDR.
EMDR, they have that, and they also have a blinking a therapy, too, where you blink over and over. Have you done that yet? It works, I'll tell you. It's freaky, but it works. But somebody has to be there. There's a therapist that does it on a SCSA. She does it for free, okay? And I'm telling you, you're talking about something that works great. It works great, yeah. So, you know, it depends on how bad.
You're talking about therapists and doctors who may not be trained are not going to help you. But the ones that have knowledge of what trauma is and have a process by which they deal with it, those are who you're looking for. So, I mean, when I talk to somebody about, you know, choosing a therapist, I never have them go with the first or the second therapist. I have them go, if they can, to interview four of them, you know, and then kind of for now pick the one that sounds, you know, closest to being helpful.
Right.
The thing you want to ask them is, are you trauma trained? Are you trauma informed? That is really important these days.
Right.
Because
and you know what to say?
They're now teaching
you about
in psychology. Go ahead.
Uh-huh. And there are some repercussions on this, and let me tell you what it is that some of the good therapists, when I say the ones you, like you're talking about, Bill, they are not available for a couple of months, you know. So if you are going to do this and you find the right person, you know, make sure that you call them and try to set an appointment up early, because they're not going to take you in like this week, you know. Carol is one here. She's two months out, you know, 3 months out sometimes. So that, you know, she's probably one of the best ones around, but, you know, there's others too, you know. So like you said, you know, you got to find and do your homework, you know, and other people too. If you know people that has had it done and they really rely and trust this person, get that name, ask questions, you know, try to get an appointment set up. If you trust that person you're talking to, you know, but it might not be for you, you know, like I said, and everybody is, you know, it's just the fact that there are some things out there that can help, you know, with having PTSD and depression and all of that. Now it's difficult. You go through the process and it actually brings you back to your childhood days. Okay. And it's very, very traumatizing. But the effects after, and it's sessions, and it usually goes, I think, about 10 altogether, you know. But they normally do come out, you know, feeling much better as a person. I don't know. I've never done it. But I know a lot of people that have, you know.
Yeah.
So
I know people who have had great effect and others who didn't really work for it. But that's also up to how good the doctor is. I mean, you don't want to go to somebody who's not trained, you know, doesn't know what they're doing. In fact, the EMDR people have to be licensed. You know, they have to pass a test and so forth. So do, of course, therapists and, of course, doctors.
Right.
Life coaches may not, but you have to be careful with them.
I tell you, if you have a really good life coach who's also a survivor, that may work. At least, because you know what the bottom line is? Our biggest challenge, and it's the reason that what you just said occurs, our biggest challenge is to talk about our story, is to get it out, is to get rid of the secret, even if it's only with one person. And in giving away the secret, we do relive some of the experiences. Mm-hmm. We are triggered. We trigger ourselves. But you have to do that in order to walk through it all, and it is worth the journey is the point.
Absolutely, that's
what all of this is about, is telling our story, you know?
That's right. And I'm so glad that you said that, Bill, because, you know, that is the main thing that I want in this world these days, you know, is for people to come out. Because they, at some point, you know, the average age is 52 years old, okay? I'm so worried about the younger generations of the 20s, the 30s, and the 40s that haven't come out yet, that it's going to hit them at some point, you know? And I want to set the stage for them. I want to make sure that they have people that they can trust, and that's the biggest thing about this whole deal is the trust factor. You know, who can I trust now? I don't trust anybody. I don't want to talk to anybody. But when they reach that point, you know, where they can't take it anymore, I know it is. There's no question. If they are truly, a survivor, then it's going to happen at some point, you know. And usually, you know, it's in their 50s. So, yeah, I'm praying, you know, that they come out early. And that's what I'm trying to do more these days is for people to tell us stories at a younger age so they don't have to live through this. The problem is that so many of them have families, okay? They don't want to get involved with this because of the embarrassment, the social distancing that comes when you come out with some people. Like if they have kids, you know, and somebody saw them on maybe heard them on a radio station or they went on the news, you know, then all of a sudden it may create turmoil within the household because they don't quite understand what happened yet. You know, it's like a shock, you know, initial. And then the family is in shock. They don't know how to handle it initially. So then, you know, the social atmosphere becomes difficult if other people know around that don't quite understand, you know, what exactly happened, you know. So that's when I step in, okay? I want to make sure that these people have the right avenue every single time to make the right steps as easy as possible to get through it, you know, and that they have the right people. And that's the thing, because you can't keep telling your story to doctors over and over and over and over, right? Because you're traumatizing yourself, you know? That's all you're thinking about. It's like, oh, I'm going to walk in this doctor, I'm going to tell him this and I'm telling that. Man, I forgot to tell him about this, you know? I mean, and it's over and over and over. So, you know, you have to be prepared about that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we're at the end of the show here, right, Penelope?
We are. But, you know, that's a great point. I think it's also, that's where NASCAR is a wonderful platform because when you tell your story, you are heard by those who have walked in very similar shoes, and you are not alone. We are down to the last 30 seconds, and I just want to say thank you all for being
thank
on.
You.
I want to thank Nancy Brown, who lives in Georgia, our West Virginia ambassador. I want to thank Don Anderson from Louisiana calling in. Thank you, and Bill. So thank you all so much. We had a great show tonight. Some difficulties.
I think we
always
got popped on.
Wrap up the shows. I just want to say keeping our children safe is all of our responsibility. If you see something, please say something. I want to thank you all. I want to wish you all a wonderful evening. Good night.
All right. Good night, y'all.
Tomorrow, 'cause that's gone.